Hello again. This morning, we are going to switch gears a bit and get back to some of the basics of philosophy that I'm working on. And if in one of the last episodes I tackled the question of how there are no painful truths, right now I want to look at the idea of an ugly truth. Looking back at what previous philosophers thought, and not that I'm putting myself in their direct company, but we stand on the shoulder of giants after all. So Plato actually thought that truth and beauty are interconnected, and they're both forms of the ultimate reality, the quote-unquote good, and that beauty was a manifestation of truth, accessible through sensory experience. Aristotle, on the other hand, was focusing more on the physical, the observable world, and he thought of as beauty as emerging from harmony, order, and proportion, and that these, in turn, align with truth, in the sense that they reveal the true nature of things. Moving on to Enlightenment, Kant, that's a big one. He linked beauty to subjective judgment, but also to universality. In art, Keats famously said in Ode on a Grecian Urn, "Beauty is truth, truth, beauty." I often say that artists managed to get to the truth ages before scientists, in many cases, by following their intuition rather than the scientific method, which doesn't make one better than the other. I think this is a very good example of how an artist would intuit a very deep philosophical truth. And I know people don't think of philosophy as a science, generally. I completely disagree here, and I think this is a subject for tomorrow, maybe. But to get back at beauty here and truth and the relationship between them, Keats was a romantic, and the romantics in general found that beauty was a revelation of profound truths about existence, emotion, etc. One more notable contribution was Hegel, which dealt directly with aesthetics, which is one of my favorite subjects and the subject of my current book. And Hegel suggested that art and beauty are the way in which truth manifests in the world, that beauty becomes something like a sensory expression of deeper truths that might otherwise escape us. Existentialists and the postmodernists, the likes of Sartre, Camus, and Derrida, which I think did so much damage that it's going to take us a long time to just realize the philosophical bomb that they set off and how much it destroyed and how many were killed by it. But they, of course, don't agree. They challenged any kind of link between truth and beauty is purely subjective, is purely in the eye of the beholder, and hey, if I found this beautiful, then there's nothing that you can say that can prove me wrong. And of course, this is all meant to foster relativism and to tear down any solid anchors and markers that one would use as a guide for thinking and rationality and philosophy. But moving on, even if we look at science, if we look at physicists, mathematicians, Einstein, Dirac, they spoke of beauty when they referred to their theories, or not necessarily theirs, but of scientific theories. They equated simplicity, the symmetry, and the power of, and of course, power. Don't get me started on that. There's a triad. I'm going to give you a sneak peek into future content. There's a triad. Truth, beauty, and power. And today we're just taking one side of that triangle and briefly looking at it. The side between the two points of truth and beauty. But yes, even the explanatory power of the scientific theories looked beautiful to them. The elegance of the theories, and of course the power of the theories, because guess what? Power and beauty are also linked. So that's all well and good, but we have to do our due diligence and look at counterarguments. We can't just cite stuff that agrees with us. So is there such a thing as an ugly truth? I think that's the most important question here. Because if we can disprove the existence of ugly truths, just like we did with the painful truths in one of the previous episodes, well then, job's almost done. Because the absence of ugliness doesn't mean the presence of beauty. Just like the absence of a negative does not mean the presence of a positive. It just leaves you at zero. But it's okay, it's getting us half of the way there. Because the other part is the easy part. Like proving the beauty inherent in truth, that's easy. The problem is, how do you distinguish truth from ugliness? Intuitively, we all know that there's a lot of beauty in truth. But how about the ugliness? Now, let's take an example. Like, let's take, what's a good example of an ugly truth? The worst thing I can come up with right now, I don't know, let's say something horrible like child cancer, like child terminal stage, the child's going to die, and it's going to be a slow and painful death. That, off the top of my head, I think if we can deal with that, there's hardly something worse than that. Maybe, you know, child abuse, child murder. I don't know. It's getting dark all of a sudden. Let's just stick to this for now. Let's think about this truth. Children, small children, get cancer. And it's not through any fault of their own. They haven't lived enough to be responsible for getting cancer in any meaningful way. It's just bad luck. Ghinion, as we say in Romanian. What counterpoints can we make to the statement that the existence of childhood terminal cancer is an ugly truth, and therefore is an example that invalidates the very principle that truth equals beauty? Because it's true that terminal childhood cancer exists. And what's the beauty in that? Well, in this sense, one of the philosophers I forgot to mention, Kant, he went closer to the ultimate truth, which is he linked beauty to both subjective judgment, but also to universality. He said something that is very hard to unpack in a short episode that's meant to just be a quick overview, but he said that beauty involves a purpose without purpose, a purposiveness without purpose, and that beauty is linked to human perception and cognition, but it's also something universal. And I tend to agree with this, because just like ethics can be objective versus subjective, and traditionally they were thought of as being subjective, you have to believe in a specific God or a specific set of arbitrary rules, and belief was required. And of course, Stefan Molyneux proved that it isn't, and that there is such a thing as an objective morality, objective ethics. I believe the same thing is true about aesthetics. There is such a thing as subjective aesthetics and objective aesthetics, and they are linked. And like Kant says, appreciating beauty helps us access an experience that feels both individual and universal. So it kind of links the two of them together. So what's the first counterpoint? against the argument that the existence of childhood terminal cancer is an ugly truth. Well, I think beauty can emerge from how people respond to suffering. Can you think of an example where from human tragedy and horrific disease and misfortune, such as childhood terminal cancer, arises a tremendous, profound beauty based on, for example, acts of compassion, based on courage and grace, based on the response that these little kids can have in the face of such a horrible fate? And what is this, if not extreme beauty? Like, the families, the medical professionals, the community, they can all rally against the disease, around the sick children. The extraordinary acts of love, of care, and of resilience. I mean, this is some of the stuff that you know, tearjerker movies are made out of. Like, some of the highest human values and the highest human beauty can only be extracted from situations like this of grave and horrible misfortune. The way everyone responds to this misfortune can highlight the beauty of human connection and of empathy, not to mention the courage and the grace of the children. Many children facing terminal illness show some of the most remarkable bravery and wisdom I've ever seen in my life. And they can inspire others in ways that no one else can. They are paragons of strength and the human spirit. So my first counterpoint is that if beauty emerges from how people respond to suffering, then the truth of suffering may still be interwoven with the beauty of love and resilience. Okay, but you might say back to me in the debate that hey, you're kind of dodging the main point. The main point wasn't that there's also beauty from an ugly truth. An ugly truth can have beautiful consequences. It was the existence of the ugly truth itself. So stop trying to dodge that. I promise I'm not. I'm not dodging it. That's why I just addressed it. Let's look beyond the immediate appearance. Because I would suggest that the ugliness of terminal cancer in children is apparent. Of course, we all see it. But what is ugly and beautiful, but that which we are attracted by versus that which we are repelled by? Are we repelled by death, by disease, by misfortune? Of course we are. There are things we want to stay away from, all of them. Are we attracted by health, by prosperity, by safety? Of course. But guess what? One cannot exist without the other. So the price we pay for the existence of beauty is the existence of ugliness. Our preferences for beauty, our preferences for things we want to obtain, are in contrast with the things that we want to get away from. If we want a thing, we also want to get away or refuse to accept the opposite of that thing. We want health, we reject illness. We want power, we reject weakness. We want truth, we reject falsehood. Right? The problem arises when we are being inconsistent in these principles. So how can the disease itself be beautiful? Well, think about it in terms of the interconnectedness of all life. the biological mechanisms that lead to cancer are part of the same natural processes that sustain life. You cannot have life without death. You cannot have good without evil. The very existence of one concept requires the existence of the other. The outcomes of the disease are devastating. Agreed. The underlying truths about biology and evolution reveal an awe-inspiring complexity that is beautiful. So, essentially, the answer to the question, is there such a thing as an ugly truth, is the same as, is there such a thing as a painful truth? It's not the truth itself. It's just our reaction to it. Ugliness is our perception of the truth. The subjective perception of a truth can lead to us perceiving it as ugly. But the objective analysis of the truth can only result in a verdict of beautiful. So, looking at things objectively, as we must do in philosophy, we cannot ever consider a truth as being ugly, because truth is the highest goal in any science, in any philosophy, and any science and philosophy that does not hold truth to be its highest value is doomed. I think that's evident. To me, the existence of cancer is horrible. To the cancer cells, it is tremendously beautiful. See, the truth is the same. Cancer exists. To me, that's an ugly truth. To the cancer, it would be beautiful. Imagine two warring nations that have been at war for some considerable time and hate each other for whatever reason. To each one of them, the existence of the other is ugly, but its own existence is beautiful. Again, ugliness and beauty are just words for things we want and are attracted by, and things we do not want or are repelled by. If we are to be as objective as possible, because we are doing science and philosophy here, then we can only say that truth is beautiful because, as we said, truth is the highest goal that we're trying to attain. If we are chasing it, if we are working towards it, if we are trying to obtain it, then that makes it beautiful for us. I hope that's helpful. Let me know what you think, and we'll meet again tomorrow, I hope.